Hey everybody, on this episode of the Comic Book Exchange, we're getting up close and personal with Skybound Comics editorial director, Sean Makowitz. Let's do this.
This is Book Circle Online, featuring in-depth discussion, insight, news, and commentary on all the world's leading book titles and their authors. And now, Book Circle Online.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Comic Book Exchange here on Book Circle Online. This is the show where we break down your favorite comic books here, talk to the creators and the people responsible to bring them to your eyeballs. I'm going to keep working on that every week until it actually lands. Yeah, right?
Sure.
That's the dream.
Right, yes, that's right. There you go. I'm one of your hosts. I'm one of your hosts, Frank Brand. You can follow me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie.
And I'm your Oracle, Lucretia Lyons. You guys can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one.
I am Lex Michael. I'm a little bit over-caffeinated and my foot is asleep, and you can find me all over social media at TheLexMichael.
I can't deal with you, Dave. God damn it. Hi, I'm Joelle Monique. You just find me everywhere at Joelle Monique.
There it is go. Okay to cuss on this show.
Now, folks, as always, like us on Facebook there. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hop on the chat. As Lucretia said, she is our oracle. She's got the chat up and running. So if you have any questions about comic books, or more specifically, Sean or Skybound Comics, feel free to drop them in the chat and we'll ask him. Now, as I said, part of the show, what we do is we like to get up close and personal with the people who make these comics that you get to read every single week. And right now, we have the editorial director of Skybound Comics, Sean Makowitz.
Yeah. Yes. I just pay the people to make the comics.
Oh, there you go. That's it. Now, we're going to be talking about everything, but I know we have a new title that's coming out next Wednesday at your local comic book shop, Max Landis's new series, Green Valley. So we're going to get into that in just a moment. But first, let's turn the attention on you.
All right.
Yes.
Do it.
You're in the hot seat. Yes, that's right. So, Sean, tell us a little bit about your origins there, your secret origin, as it were.
Sure. God, I don't know. I've been No, I mean, I've been at Skybound for 4 years now. Before that, I worked at DC Comics for a while. I would like to say that Skybound is a far superior company to work for than DC Comics. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, before that, I worked in the romance industry, editing romance books, and, you know, that's it.
Now, growing up, though, were you a big comic book reader?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think I kind of got started with, I had this, like, dog-eared Return of the Jedi adaptation.
Oh, nice.
And it was somehow missing like all the Jabba stuff, and it just started off with Luke kind of kicking people's asses on the skiff on the barge and all that. But then they used to pack comics in with a lot of toys back then, you know, He-Man stuff and G.I. Joe. I think my first comic book was a G.I. Joe with snake eyes on the cover. Just a headshot. It's pretty awesome. But yeah, I've been heavy into comics since then, yeah.
Now, because I know, like, that Return of the Jedi, that was Archie Goodwin and Al Williamson.
I don't know. The credits were ripped out.
Oh, that's right.
Never
yes.
went back. But no, yeah, I think so. Yeah.
There was just always something about that. I know that IDW just put out, like, for Empire Strikes Back, a big one of those artist editions there.
Okay.
Just to see Al Williamson's art just blown up that size, just always so cool.
Yeah, it was crazy because it was, like, paperback size. It wasn't, like, any of the formats that we read comics in nowadays. So it just kind of fit in a bookshelf and looked innocuous.
That's always, like, one of those things, like, they would do, like, at book sales, like, at schools and stuff. Mm-hmm. You could end up buying like those paperbacks, the really just tiny condensed versions of cool comic books.
Yeah, yeah. Either that or like Gremlins 2 adaptations, which I did purchase at one time.
So for you, so you read comic books, you love the medium, but then once you finish schooling, whatever,
sure,
you decide, is working on romance novels, was that your first stop out of school?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I went to school in New York and I wanted to stay there, and actually I got a job in textbooks. That was part-time, kicked around a couple other jobs, but I worked for Harlequin Books, which is one of the biggest romance publishers out there. And actually, their business and their fans is a lot like what comics is like. I was working on about 10 to 12 novels a month.
Jesus.
You know, they have these romance conventions. There's cosplay. And, I mean, it's pretty fascinating, except everything over there is written by, you know, usually more middle-aged women. I don't want to just hem it in, but most of my authors were... It was almost a second career. They either were homemakers or people that had retired and were like, hey, we always wanted to do this, and they wrote, and it was a kind of a really cool job that I appreciated and gave me a lot of the skills that I learned to kind of step into comics and make that transition pretty seamless.
That's interesting, and that's something that I'd never really considered, but it makes so much sense that the culture surrounding romance fiction
absolutely.
Would be similar because it is so about fantasy and wish fulfillment.
Yeah, and actually it's got more in common probably with like... creator-owned comics, because these people would create their own worlds and their own towns and kind of populate them with, you know, a family of rugged cowboy brothers at on a ranch, and you would follow them. But yeah, I mean, it's silly, but it's, you know, it's wish fulfillment, it's fantasy, and it's a you know, it can be sweet and sexy at the same time.
Sure.
See, that's exactly why Frank and I watch soaps, and you guys don't get it. Yeah. It's similar.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you're ever wondering if Rogue and Gambit were going to get together, you should have just read some of the Harlequin.
Exactly.
Love it.
So while you're working there, was that always kind of a goal of yours to work in the comic book industry?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, being in New York, you know, you had Marvel and DC there back then. I interviewed at Marvel. They didn't hire me. 6 months later, I got hired at DC, and then it's kind of been in this world ever since.
So was it easy now with the romance background, when you move over to DC and start working in a medium that you really loved growing up as a kid, was it just easy to translate just from working romance right into comics?
I mean, you know, you learn certain skills like dealing with creators and scheduling and stuff like that. But it's a whole nother world. I mean, you know, the personalities in comics are a little bit more wild than the people I worked with on series romance. I don't know. It's a job, but it's a job that's pretty engaging and can be fun if, you know, you don't let it beat you down. So when the opportunity came from Robert to join Skybound, it was like, I don't think a job like mine exists in comics. The amount of freedom I have to develop, you know, new titles and work with new creators and, yeah, it's been a fantastic experience.
So this is what interests me. When do you, are you out like searching for writers? Are they bringing you their scripts? How does that kind of...
Yeah, I mean, it's both. We work with some writers. For instance, we launched a book over the summer called Horizon by this writer, Brandon Thomas, and artist Juan Gedeon. And Brandon's a guy that used to write online, you know, back in 2002, 2003. And it was about him trying to break into comics. He'd done some work at Marvel. He'd done some work for Rob Liefeld. And he was always a guy that I liked his voice, and I had, you know, years later he put out this book called The Many Adventures of Miranda Mercury that was just fantastic, and I tried to get him hired at DC and it didn't work out, and so an opportunity came to develop new projects. He was just a natural fit. Like, he was just one of those guys that never understood why he didn't have a career, when I think there's a lot of people that just, you know, they write what's been written before, and he really had a voice that he could bring. So, you know, getting Horizon up, which is a sci-fi book. It's our take on a invasion story, except it's alien retaliation. It just was a no-brainer to work with someone that I like that much.
So when you're working for DC, at the time it's more of a corporate entity. So anytime you're doing things, it's in the service of that kind of big corporate directive. But now all of a sudden you meet Robert in Skybound.
Yeah.
When you start talking to him about possibly moving over there, did he kind of say like, well, this is what I want, this is what the mission of Skybound is?
Well, Skybound had been around for a couple of years, and they kind of explained to me that it was a place that, you know, he was publishing his titles, and you know, they had developed, their first book was called Witch Doctor with Brand Seifert and Lucas Kettner. And they really wanted, they wanted to put together a system that could do for new creators what Robert had built from The Walking Dead. So, you know, not only are we a comic book company, but we have full divisions of interactive, film and TV, merchandise, sort of new media, social media. So, I mean, we can bring a creator in, and it starts in comics, or we can bring a creator in on the video game side. Like, we have some creators that did a game called Oxenfree. And then we can kind of go, hey, if there's any other thing that you're interested in doing at the company, let's introduce you to people and kind of build it up in a very organic way, instead of just, you know, forcing things and figuring it out that way.
So for you, how much of it is you going out recruiting talent to come in, and how much of it is people coming to you trying to pitch?
It started off mostly going out to recruit people. Now, actually, my editorial, I have an editor and assistant editor underneath me that, you know, do a bulk of talent development now. We currently publish 9 titles, and we have at least another 20 to 30 in development. So we have a lot. So we're very selective at this point. But, you know, whenever we get a great proposal, then, you know, we jump on it. We're pretty nimble that way. We make decisions quickly. We know what we like. There's not a lot of hemming and hawing, and it's all in service of the creator's vision. Like, I mean, I'm too busy to... I know there's a lot of knocks on Marvel and DC where they editorial... what they call it, involvement or screw-em shit. That wasn't my experience over there, but it's more the machinery of a corporation that takes time. There's 6 levels above you getting approvals. That takes time, whereas I can go to my 2 bosses, Robert and DA, and we just knock it around and we go, yeah, let's do it or let's not do it. Let's not waste anyone's time.
That has to be such a change of pace from working at DC. So to go over there all of a sudden, like, oh, I just only have to talk to 2 guys, get the okay, and we're good to go?
Well, I mean, my first major titles at DC were... with the New 52 launched, so I was there when all that planning was. So, I mean, that was a whole different sort of beast. And I, you know, I'm proud of some of the work that I worked on there. I worked on Aquaman, Suicide Squad,
hell yeah,
but Earth and Earth 2. I mean, those are probably all the ones that I really enjoyed But yeah, I mean, it was a very ambitious plan that I think that they've gotten better with Rebirth, but we'll see the long tail on that.
So what are you looking for in when a script comes across your desk? Like, does it have to engage you? Are you looking for just an audience that you can sell it to?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's mostly about, it's a gut thing off the bat. You know, is there a premise that we haven't seen before? I mean, we do primarily genre books, and we're not looking to reinvent the wheel as much as give a fresh angle on it, whether it's, you know, the POV onto it. Like, for instance, with Horizon, it's basically about Earth is dying, and they've gone out to look for new planet to bring the population to. Except our POV is on the aliens that are about to be taken over. So they send a small group to Earth to sabotage Earth so that humans can never leave. So it's more that POV of like what it means to be, you know, taken over, conquered, forced out of your home. You know, in a way, it's kind of a reverse gentrification story. So there's like that layer, but at the same time, Brandon writes incredible action. It's a predominantly female soldier team. So the, you know, you see like Band of Brothers and stuff like that, but to see a predominantly female military team has a different quality to it as well. So I think just that, like that sort of twist, that POV on it is what we're looking for. But, you know, surprising characters, the author has a voice and brings a real sense of emotional connection to the story that I think above all will make sure that we can engage with it on a long term.
It just sounds like the system that you have in place affords creators this freedom that exists so rarely in comics if your hope is to reach a mass audience. There aren't that many companies doing that.
Yeah.
So that's really cool because you can tell stories where you can really explore these really interesting, heady ideas. You can create entire universes without being beholden to, as you were saying, this super rigid corporate infrastructure that dictates your every move. Like, that's very, very cool.
Yeah, I mean, we're an imprint of Image Comics, and Image, I think, is the best company out there right now that's really encouraging, you know, original visions and all that. So, I mean, that's definitely the best home, and it's a great part to be a part of Image. They're about to celebrate their 25th anniversary next year, which is incredible because that pretty much spans my entire life of reading comics. I got in a little bit before Image, but yeah, it's fantastic to be part of that framework and encourage new voices and not just some of the same old, same old.
Well, I think Image is such an interesting company to look at, and just the way they've evolved through when they first started till now, they've diversified so much and really kind of covered a lot of different genres that you don't often see, especially like if you think like the big two, so to speak, that you see them really addressing.
Well, and that's like, I mean, really what I want to do right now is, you know, we service crime and fantasy and horror, sci-fi. I would love to do some romance books and figure out a good commercial way to do that. I would love to do like a sports comic and just kind of try out some different genres that you don't see out there. And I don't know. I just think that'd be a lot of fun.
Because when you look at manga, I mean, you see them doing more romance or sports stories and things like that. What do you think it is? I mean, is it about the frequency or something about the way they release their storylines that maybe helps propel those kind of interest in that story?
Yeah, I think it's the frequency and just the storytelling. I mean, we can't do anything close to that. I mean, it's just a completely different system. But I think that's something we struggle with all the time is figuring out how much story goes into each individual unit of a comic and how many people read the comic versus how many people are picking up on the trade and do we have enough readers on the monthly issues to sustain enough time to allow people to get engaged by the trade. You know, digital definitely helps on that end. But it really is the battle every day is about awareness, you know. Coming out here, talk about Green Valley or Horizon, people may have never heard of these titles because I think we probably represent a very small percentage of fans that kind of know everything is coming out and we got our eye on this. Sure. But there's gaps in what we, you know, you didn't know about that cool Luke Cage book.
I know, I was like, oh, look at that. And look at that, it actually came into the discussion.
Yeah. It's coming to the end. Why?
But yeah, no, I mean, our battle right now is on awareness and then having all the different departments of Skybound kind of do that. You know, sometimes, unfortunately, we live in a society where you have to make a television show to legitimize these original visions, whereas, you know, someone kind of, they've known Spider-Man for 50 years, so they're always going to have that, it's a comfort food, whereas this is, it's not always easy, but we always want to do books that are engaging, make you think, but are also not a burden to read.
Sure.
So yeah, it's a fine line.
Well, it's exciting to hear you talk about these aspirations the way that you are, and I love, like, you want to do a romance book one day, you want to do a sports book, and I love that because I love anything, I'm so in favor of anything that furthers the idea of comic books as a as a literary medium,
yeah.
as an artistic medium that is equally valid as books, as film, as television.
Right.
And of course, I don't think anybody in this room, and presumably nobody who's watching this show,
yeah.
needs to be told that, no. but I'm sure you guys are all aware that there are plenty of people that still need their eyes open. When they think comic books, they're only thinking superheroes, or at best, they're thinking superheroes and maybe some hard genre stuff.
Well, I mean, I still get asked, like, hey, is there a difference between comic books and graphic novels? So, I mean, that's still an awareness thing, and there's a lot of people that are ashamed to read comics, so they say, I read graphic novels, or and it's mostly just trades, which is just collections of comic books.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. It's we've been winning that battle for the past 10, 20 years anyways in terms of awareness and people reading this stuff. So people that want to read, that's actually part of the real battle, though, is getting people to read more. But
in general, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
To back it up for 1 second, just to go, so you're doing romance books, then you finally get to work in comics.
Sure.
So as a working in a romance for novels, you're just dealing basically with the author. But also
yeah.
when you go to comics, you're dealing with the author, the artist, the colorist, the letterer. There's
yeah.
so many other people that are involved.
I still don't know what an inker does all the time. Like,
how much more of a challenge is it to do a comic book when you have so many other people that have to get their stuff done to make that a final product?
Yeah, I mean, scheduling's a lot more difficult. Also, I mean, when you're publishing books, you're always... They go to print about 6 months before they hit the shelves. Whereas comics, you know, we're sending out books this Friday and they'll be in stores in 3 weeks. So, I mean, a lot of things when I was at DC, you get a lot more people. You're getting fill-in colorists or inkers because someone's not hitting their deadlines. Here, we schedule all our stuff in advance. I mean, we don't launch books until we have at least 3 issues completely done. So, for instance, Green Valley, it's coming out. We're about to start issue 7 for pencils, and the first 2 issues are, you know, fully colored, lettered. So, I mean, we're up through issue 6 is inked. So, I mean, we have... But as soon as that first one gets printed, it becomes real, and then it's like a ticking clock. And I'm probably safe on Green Valley, mm-hmm. but, you know...
Well, to balance it, because Giuseppe's also been doing Amazing Spider-Man,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he's
so
crazy.
How's that been working when he's doing that, but then also doing Green Valley? Has that been a tough to juggle?
I mean, he's just a true professional. I mean, I've loved his work. I first saw he did some Swamp Thing with Brian K. Vaughan, and then he did a book called The Intimates at Wildstorm with Joe Casey. And, I mean, it's weird. I think he's one of the great artists out there, but when you're stuck on a book like... Oh, I say stuck on a book like Spider-Man Still Sells. I think people can take you for... I know.
That
crazy.
Hat character. Oh,
no, I mean, I think that people can take you for granted when you work on a book for a couple years and just don't realize quite what a talent he is. So... I also think working with a new inker and working with a new colorist like Jean-Francois Bulot is just, you know, kind of gives a new dimension to his art, and people go like, oh, who is this guy? And it's like, well, you have over 10 years worth of work to catch up on.
Yeah, every time you say inker, I just smile and think of Chasing Amy. You trace around the
no,
line.
No, I know it's more than tracing. It's no, especially with the people I work with, most of them pencil and ink their own work. So I don't need to work with many independent inkers. Cliff Rathburn, who works on Green Valley, he also used to work on Invincible and Walking Dead. I'm comfortable with him. I know what he can bring to it, but not everyone. So I may have ruined some books at DC by hiring the wrong anchor. Wow. I'm sorry.
So it is a really important job. Like,
yeah, no,
yeah, my cat's name is Banky, so I just have an affection for tracers.
What I love about inkers is just what they can bring out of an artist's work that you've never really seen before. It's, when you, like if you take somebody like Tom Palmer, like inking, he has such a distinctive look to it that, I mean, you can see he just brings a little bit of himself into different artists that he inks.
Well, we currently work with Stefano Gaddiano on Walking Dead, and Charlie Adlard had inked his own stuff for, you know, over 108 issues, and we knew what Stefano would bring on. He's got a drier style, a brush, but like they. It's great. Charlie can pencil an issue in 6 days. Stefano can ink it, and that allowed us to do like 19 issues in 1 year.
Wow.
Dang. Because I loved his look with Michael Lark when he was working like in Gotham Central and stuff. I like that look.
I think he's got a very distinct style, and we knew that he would definitely work out before we'd even hired him. So, as long as he wanted to commit to it, so it made it worth his while.
Now, to go back, talent development, part of your responsibility. When you're doing that, it's certainly, I mean, finding artists are great, but I feel like you, no matter how fantastic an artist is, you still need a writer to come in with a concept to be able to like marry those two together to come up with something. So for you, when you're searching around, are you finding artists and kind of just like, I want to use them, but then you have to wait for that right pitch to kind of come in?
Yeah, I mean, we always have an easier time getting writers and pitches than we do finding truly interesting and unique artists. You know, our line is smaller. Like I said, it's 8 or 9 books. So we want to make sure that every artist we work with has a their own unique style and can measure up to the rest of them. And I think that, you know, for out of all the books we do, we don't have one weak link. But yeah, sometimes it is finding the right schedule. People are like, oh, I'm available 9 months from now. And you're like, can I wait on this project or not? I mean, we're a little bit more patient. We don't rush stuff out. Stuff, you know, is usually in development for a little bit longer. But yeah, it's tough. It's tough finding great, amazing artists that will, you know, they're in such high demand.
For the development process, I mean, I would imagine, does it vary from creator to creator? Like, what, for example, like, what are the kind of like the shortest amount of development time, or what's kind of like the longest development time for different projects you've worked on?
Well, Horizon was part of this program called Skybound Labs that we don't really publicize, but I started talking about it recently, where we work with either newer talent or people that have been out of comics for a while or just kind of haven't had a chance to pop in. We pay them to develop 3 scripts with us. And at the end of that process, we decide, do we want to move forward with this or not? And if we don't, then we give them all their rights back. We don't want to, you know, it just didn't work out. They can bring it to whoever they want. They can just use it as is. But I think our success rate so far has been like probably like 80-90%. Like, we're pretty sure that it's going to work out, but some of those take a little, some of them come in a little bit more raw. So Horizon, we've been working on for, I think, 2 years from we first started working on it, but we didn't hire an artist until about a year ago. So, you know, we got 5-6 issues in the can before it went out. So yeah,
man. And I imagine once you get an artist on, then it's character designs, things like that, and kind of locking in final looks for everything before you even start penciling any of the issues.
Yeah, I mean, Juan's got a real unique style. He did a book called Ghost Racers for Marvel, and some really crazy character designs. So we knew that he could do it, so we gave him about a month just to kind of work in, and we want to develop these aliens and what sort of you know, spacecraft, and the world is, you know, 25 years in the future, so want to make sure we're getting all that stuff right. And it was a real luxury to have the amount of time to work this stuff out and build this world and make it feel unique.
Now, for you, for Comic-Con, what is that like for you, for an experience like that? How much of it is people coming up to you, trying to show you their portfolio, trying to throw pictures at you, and how much of it are you kind of walking around Artist Alley, kind of just like, you know, trying to pick up people's brains and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, we always have portfolio reviews at the Skybound booth. I have my coworker John Moisen handle that at the end of the business. No, you know what? Like, I feel like my strength is really in story and crafting a story, and I feel like he's got a good eye for artists and can also talk to artists through what they need to get better and grow, if that's the case, or if they're, you know, I think anyone can look at a great artist and be like, yeah, you can work here, but to see someone that's a little bit raw but has talent can walk them through that, that's an important aspect. But I don't really accept, you know, open pitches, so anyone that I get a pitch from is usually something I set up a meeting with in advance.
I guess I'll put this away.
Cool.
Not on camera.
He was so excited, too.
Oh, no.
It's fine.
No,
it's fine.
I mean, a lot of the stuff comes through either through us finding people that we really like and wanna, or, you know, referrals. I think people, once they start working with us, they realize what a good, healthy space it is, so they are not scared to refer a friend.
Well, I guess we're talking about Green Valley as we're talking about that. So somebody that is working with you, Max Landis.
Yeah.
How does that whole connection happen?
I don't know. Serendipity. No, he. One of my bosses, David Alpert, is also a manager in Circle Confusion, which is a management talent agency. So Max was a client over there, and DA had helped him early in his career, and Max is a huge comic book fan. He's done some conventions with Robert, and he's just like full of energy and full of ideas, and he pitched us Green Valley, and it was something that immediately we were like, oh yeah, this is a comic book, it's a great comic book, we need to find the right artist. So yeah, that's how it happened. I mean, he had it fully conceived before we even met, so there was very little story development there.
Whose idea was to draw Ingrid like Max Landis?
I mean, it might have been Giuseppe's, who we call Camo. I mean, I think Max's energy is infectious, and Camo, I think, working on something that was a creator-owned project, he brought a whole level of energy. I mean, he's a big role-playing D&D guy, so to do a fantasy book, he was like, oh my god, I've been waiting to do a book like this, and no one at Marvel wants to pay me to do it. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of those characters kind of came out right off the bat looking how they do in the book. So, oh, wow.
So what's it like working with an artist in developing? If you get a story like this one that's already kind of ready to go, then you're mostly working with the artist to do development. And I'm curious about, like, I think it's easier to picture when you're writing what that kind of process is like back and forth. But with an artist, it's a little like, are you like, you know, just change that panel or layouts or?
Well, I mean, with a lot of our scripts, we allow the artists to, if they see ways to make changes, add panels, take panels away, we do that. So that was, this was a pretty good collaboration. My teams talk amongst each other. Like, I want them to feel like a team. It's not, they don't all go through me. If it's something delicate, they might shoot me an email on the side and be like, hey, I don't know about that. Can we discuss that as a larger point? And that's, yeah, you know, I don't throw them under the bus. But yeah, you want to build a healthy environment for them to be able to speak freely. And I mean, they're all creative people. They all have ambitions and they can be sensitive. So yeah, I mean, you know, we send him the script and then he'll send us layouts. And then we'll go through them, and generally they're spot on. I mean, he just brings a level of emotion and an action there that just, you know, really elevates the script, which was already pretty good to begin with. So that's what you hope in these collaborations, that the artist really takes it up another level.
So before we get too far away from it, I want to know, because you said that Max Landis came to you guys with this idea of essentially fully formed. Yeah. What was that pitch? Like, how did he pitch that to you guys?
I can't even nearly duplicate that level of energy.
Oh, sure.
No, I mean, you know, he basically introduced us to this group of knights called the Knights of Collodia, who are the greatest of the land. And they suffer a huge setback, and then they're approached by a boy, and he says, you know, my parents have just been killed, my town's under attack. There's a wizard. He's commanding dragons. They're killing everyone. And the knights look at him. They go, there's no such thing as wizards. There's no magic? Dragons? Like, what the hell are you talking about? But this boy is, you know, is so devastated that they go, you know, we have nothing else to do. Not nothing else to do, but, like, this seems like a genuine thing. Like, we're kind of in the rut. Let's go check it out. So, you know, you enter a world that the knights are battling something for which they have no context for. And they're truly out of their depth. And this is going to be the greatest adventure of their lives. So yeah, it's there's, I think, unlike on any of our other projects, we kind of built it as a mystery box. Like, we're not talking a lot. I think by the time issue 2 comes out and 3, there's, like, it keeps twisting, and, like, I mean, every issue just, like, kind of adds a new layer to what they're facing and what the understanding of their mission is. And also, you know, the characters, the way he built them, are just so vibrant and full of energy. I mean, it really does remind me of, like, a great 80s action adventure summer blockbuster. I mean, he built it exactly like that. He writes in a letter in the back of issue 1 that he's like, I had an idea, and I was like, oh, I must have stolen that from some old Harryhausen thing where I saw that these things were fighting. And then he's like, I kept searching, and that was my idea. Like, I didn't have to share that with anyone. So I think that really, you know, and it really does feel like a huge summer blockbuster.
Yeah, well, I was struck because we were able to take a look at the first 2 issues. And I was really struck by was, like, I'm not a big high fantasy guy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not super into Lord of the Rings, for example. Yeah. Like,
you're
Like, Game of Thrones. You know, like, I like Game of Thrones, which really surprised me because that's usually not my thing. Yeah. I was immediately struck by how crazy accessible this story was, especially for somebody like me who is not, that's not typically where I go to. And I think it is because, like you said, it feels like an 80s movie almost.
Yeah.
It feels so modern.
And that level of banter and you know, the friendship between, you know, Bertwald and Ralphus, like, it just was something that you connect with, and you know the archetypes, but they're kind of bringing a different spin to them, and it feels a little bit contemporary, but doesn't get mired in the world building. It's a very simple story, I think.
Yeah, and immediately it feels like, oh, okay, I know who these guys are, and I could actually see myself if I lived in such an era hanging around guys like
that. Yeah, you want to high five all of them.
Which which was really, really cool.
I was going to say smoke the peace pipe, but yeah, whatever. High five sounds better.
And to go back with Giuseppe, or Camo, as you call him there, just, like, as I said, I've been reading him mostly on Amazing Spider-Man.
Sure.
But just to see, like, pairing him up with Jean-Francois, there was just something about, like, the way he looks here is just, I felt like it just took the parts that I liked about Amazing Spider-Man and just made him better.
Yeah, yeah. And I think some of that is, I mean, his pencils come in pretty tight, but Cliff definitely adds some definition and, you know, can fill in some details. And then Jean-Francois, I mean, Max actually sent a, Jean was like, hey, is anyone have problem with my colors? Is like in the 3rd issue, and Max sent this video, 20-second video, that was like, no, my lack of response is not because I dislike it, I just have run out of amazing things to say about it. Like, you complete this book, and you make it special, and we love you. And it just, like, it ends, you know?
Aww.
So it's, you know, I think even if you notice the palette changes from the first issue to the second, I mean, there's something huge and monumental that happens at the end of the first issue. So the first issue is kind of very Disney and, you know, very bright, saturated colors. And then the second issue, after, you know, they go through what they go through, it's kind of kicked down, a lot more grays, and it feels like something's transforming. And I think we'll see that evolution through the color. The color itself tells its own story. So not every colorist can do that, and we're very grateful to work with John.
It is amazing to me the way the literary elements and the visual elements are working together, because there is, like you say, no spoilers, but there is that big moment near the end of the first issue, and there's a very big moment at the end of the second issue,
yeah,
where these characters are feeling, in the first issue it's horror and devastation, and at the end of the second issue it's arguably horror, but just total awe.
Yeah.
And you, as the audience member, certainly I did, felt it right along with
them. Yeah, it's that's huge. It's definitely the type of comics I like the most, end on these cliffhangers, or at least twisting the information that, I know, you're told one story, but you realize you're not told the whole story, and you keep turning that around until you get the whole picture. That's I think the best type of storytelling.
Now, Max says this, it's a 9-issue series.
Yeah.
Is this basically just that, is it? Or is this like the opening salvo to a longer kind of story arc that you want to do with these
characters? No, I mean, it's definitely, we wrap everything up by issue 9. If there's a chance to do something more in this world, that would be great. But it really does tell a complete story. Everyone has their arc, and it's really nice. It's a really nice, emotional, sweet tale at the heart of it about friendship and love and some other crazy shit.
Mm-hmm. So for you as an editor, when you're looking around for projects, how much of it is like, this project has legs and it could go, say, like The Walking Dead, 150
yeah,
issues plus, or it could be just something like this, a great 9-issue story where it
yeah,
could just be all done and encapsulated in that. For you, does either one have a preference, or you like to have a nice little balance?
Yeah, we have a nice balance. I think you kind of look at the story and also look at, you know, how well known the creators are. And, you know, I mean, our two longest running series aren't written by Robert, are Birthright by Josh Williamson. And Josh, you know, has been working for a while, but The Flash has definitely kind of gotten him a lot more notice. We saw some sales spikes on Birthright. I know Nailbiter is doing better. So that's been running,
yes,
20 issues.
Nailbiter is my favorite.
Oh, good.
I'm obsessed with it.
I dig that book as well. And Manifest Destiny by Chris Dingus, who was an unknown. He's a TV writer, but between the writing and the art there, you know, I think people kind of latched on. So those books, Birthright has a definite ending. Manifest Destiny has a definite ending. That's probably a little bit further off. But yeah, I mean, every story has its own size, and you hope that you can accommodate that.
So for those ones that have sort of an ending in mind, do they come to you with like, well, this is basically the end, and we might go on some tangents before we get there?
Yeah, Birthright was definitely like that. I mean, Josh had kind of mapped out, I think, the first 25, but also, you know, we kind of knew signposts there on. Now, that first 25 looks completely different than what is actually the first 25. But, yeah, I mean, we kind of knew all the big moments. Birthright is kind of this fantasy book that takes place in the real world. I don't know if you guys have read it. It's basically about a family. Dad's playing catch, throws the ball into the woods, kids goes to retrieve it, never comes back. A year passes, the family has kind of fallen apart. The parents are getting divorced. His older brother's having troubles at school. They get a call from the police, and the police say, hey, we have a lead about your son. So they go into the police station. They see this guy, this huge, muscular guy, sitting in the interrogation room. They go, is that the guy that killed my son? They go, oh, we think that is your son. Hmm. And basically what happened is he got lost in a land like Narnia, and he's fought for 15 years over there to conquer the evil sorcerer, and he finally completed his mission, and now he's home, and he said, I just want to find my family again. So this family is reunited, but like Green Valley, there's more to that story, which kind of launches us in. But it was definitely a book layered with reveals and twists along that are all sort of character centric, so you know, keep dropping those in.
I have to go to my comic book store when we're done here.
If you're reading Nailbiter, so then you know, I definitely think, and we have a great artist, Andre Brisson, on there that just, our imperative every issue is to draw one splash that makes him just lose his mind. And he does it. You know, I have a couple pieces of his art hanging on my wall, and he just gets, like, really into it. So, that's nice.
Now, Robert Kirkman, of course,
sure,
the man behind Skybound. Certainly he's doing, he's got Outcast, he's got Walking Dead, plus he's got the series as well.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, he's like Thief of Thieves, other things that he's
Invincible.
Just, yes, Invincible. So how does How does he balance his whole day, and how do you work with him and make sure that everything kind of...
A lot of persistence.
Yes.
No, I mean, he's good. He's actually, for someone as busy he is, and, you know, there's probably things I don't even know that he's working on, and juggling, you know, between the two Walking Dead series and our Outcast on Cinemax. Like, he's incredibly busy. So, no, but we have a really good relationship. We can be really honest with each other, and it's something that we developed pretty early on. And I think he trusted in me to get books out on time, and I definitely proved myself, and... you know, he's actually, I think, probably more on time now than he was when I first worked with him, which is pretty insane because he's gotten a lot busier, but yeah, he's a professional.
The Thief of Thieves, that's a series that I enjoy.
Okay.
And Sean Martinborough doing the art. Oh,
great.
Man.
Yeah.
I loved when he was with Greg Rucka on Detective.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was, and I like,
oh, he did a Luke Cage series too, mm-hmm. Luke Cage Noir, I think. So,
oh, that's right. Yeah. On sale. You can get it now.
Comixology.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. There you go.
I don't want to promote that stuff.
No,
I like
Sean. It's Skybound, guys.
Sean's very proud of that. So, yeah. You know.
I felt like it's like I hadn't seen him in such a long time until Thief of Thieves came back. And I was like, because I love the way that he would just, the coloring and everything on Detective, so it was really cool to be able to see some of that.
Yeah, Detective, that was his first ongoing book, I believe. He used to ink and work with Jean-Paul Lyon on Challengers of the Unknown. I mean, Jean-Paul is an amazing artist. But yeah, Sean's great. I think he's one of those guys that at the time that Robert offered him Thief of Thieves, he was really undervalued. He's just, his line work is great. His storytelling is incredible. He's a really nice guy. So I think giving him an opportunity to join Thief of Thieves, and, you know, he's been on it. God, that's actually, I'm sorry, I misspoke. That's our longest running series that isn't one of Robert's. We're, I don't know, issue 37 or so. So,
it's a good series, guys.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, I mean, Andy Diggle has been writing it for the past, like, 3 years and just has he loves building these intricate heists. But also, again, we never are that far from caring about our characters and, like, getting really involved in their lives and how this life of crime impacts that. So, it always comes back to character, hopefully.
All right, so Sean, as we're getting closer to wrapping up, like, who is somebody, a creator out there that you'd love to be able to get involved in the Skybound family?
Oh, man, put me on the spot, right?
Yes, because they're all watching right now. They're all watching.
No, I mean, I think one of my favorite artists right now is Chris Somney. I mean, he's just like an incredible storyteller. You can tell he brings so much to, I mean, Mark Waid is a great writer, but he's brought so much to Daredevil and Black Widow, and I mean... You know, an artist of that caliber would be great to bring in. But, you know, this probably is like the saccharine answer, but I'm always looking for the next generation of people. That's very fulfilling to give people their first work in comics. We have a guy, Nico Walter, who does a book called Demonic right now for us. And the growth he's exhibited over the first 6 issues, and he's working on another sort of top secret project right now, and the growth he's made from series to series is really awesome. So you want to kind of hope to be able to give opportunities to the next generation.
Yeah, I mean, I guess because it's that balance of artists from the next generation, but then also artists like Sean Martinborough, somebody that's kind of undervalued. They've been around for a while, and they've had a really chance to get that project to really let them show what they've got.
Well, I mean, I'm a sports fan. I'm from Massachusetts, so I'm a big Patriots fan. So the way that they...
Chris is excited about that.
The way that they construct their teams is, you know, finding undervalued assets that can kind of fill in these roles, but also taking, you know, undervalued veterans... It's I don't know. You can't just do all of everything.
Chris, you want to talk about the Patriots?
How
a little
I
bit?
Feel about the Patriots? Yeah. No, I love Massachusetts and.
You echo the nation.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm a big hockey fan, but okay. I'm from Texas, so it's Cowboys, Cowboys, Cowboys. But yeah, I'm like, as you were saying, you want more sports novels. I'm like, Yamir Yager needs his own comic book, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Bring the mullet back and the comic.
I have a friend that's a huge Pittsburgh fan, so, God, I don't need to do anything with Pittsburgh.
We could chat.
One last question I wanted to ask you. Do you have time to read comics as you're making all of these comics? And if so, what is in your read list?
Yeah, I mean, actually, I do read a lot of comics still. What I've been reading lately? I mean, from Image, I love Southern Bastards.
Yes.
That's my favorite book from them. God, I'm on the spot again.
Talking Spoilers.
You know what? I really like Lake of Fire is a new book that came out. It's by Nathan Fairbairn, who's actually a colorist, but he writes colors. I'm blanking on the artist's name, but it's fantastic. It's sort of this... it takes place in France post-Crusade, and there's kind of an alien invasion. So you have these knights in France taking on these aliens, yes, while there's all this religious hysteria. And yeah, it's a really cool series. It looks beautiful, and I think Nathan, you know, he's an incredible colorist, but he's also a great writer too. So you never can kind of pigeonhole someone into one role or not.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, folks, that is going to be doing it for the end of this episode. But as always, folks, you can like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, follow us there on Twitter. Sean, if they want to follow you on Twitter and sure, learn about all the cool stuff that you and Skybound Comics are doing, where can they find you?
Yeah, I mean, you can find us at, I think, at Skybound or at Skybound Entertainment. I'm not quite sure. And at Sean Makowitz. Yeah.
And make sure you check out Green Valley by Max Landis.
Yeah, please do.
Yes, Giuseppe Camicoli coming out October 5th. Nine-issue series of Image Comics. We've seen the first. We've read the first two.
Thumbs up.
Very awesome.
Yes. Everybody.
Yeah, first issue is oversized at 30 pages for $2.99. So
that's what I love.
Good value.
I love that with Image Comics. A lot of the first issues for series are just oversized for that same price.
Well, you got to hook them. You know, I think that's something that we can credit to BKV, who did it with Saga. Had a double-sized first issue, and it really gave you a nice chunk of stories. You understood what it was all about.
Oh man, you can't
that's
go
a good series.
But I hope, but I definitely hope people check this book out, and I hope even if fantasy is not your thing, it's not my thing either. Yeah. This book is good. It's
Now, next week, folks, we're Luke Cage, of course, dropping on September 30th. They're on Netflix, all 13 episodes. You look
so
at Joelle,
good.
Look at there that. Holding a copy of Luke Cage. Next episode, next Wednesday, we'll be breaking down Luke Cage. We're all going to be picking our favorite stories from that character.
He's pulling on the rhino's head.
Look at that. Putting that guy in a headlock. So we'll be picking our 4 favorite stories here that we think that show Luke Cage is the awesome character that he is. We'll be talking about that a little next episode.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, folks, if you want to continue the conversation with us even after the show's over, Joelle, where can they find you?
You guys can follow me everywhere at Joelle Monique. Hit me up on Twitter. Tomorrow I will be at CAA doing the premiere of HBO's new Westworld. I'm going to try to tweet and do some snapping and things for you guys. Should be fun.
I am Lex Michael. All of our social media at The Lex Michael. I will not be at CAA tomorrow, but hit me up anyway.
Sure.
And all of course, I'm Lucretia Lyon, guys. You can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere on the internet, since there is only one. And all night here on Sunday, whatever show you throw on, it's me.
There you go. And you can follow me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie, and I'll just be sitting here quietly in this room until next Wednesday.
when we let him out again.
You can work on that comic pitch.
That's right. Yes. I mean, Sean, if this happens, just fall into your lap on the way out. I mean, thanks so much for joining us, folks. We'll see you next week on Book Circle Online for the Comic Book Exchange.
Thank you.
From managing editor Jason Squamata, executive producers Maria Menounos, Phil Svitek, and Kevin Undergaro, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Book Circle Online. For more discussion, go to bookcircleonline.com. And if you have comments, questions, or book title suggestions, write us at info@bookcircleonline.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this is Book Circle Online. BCO, join the circle.